More in my headphones, please. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hello, folks. It's John Hogue here, the other guy on The Other Podcast, and live and direct from an exotic Valdosta.
Hey.
How you doing, Diana?
I'm good. I am surrounded by the thickest fog you have ever seen. Well,
really?
Okay, it's not Thule fog, but we've got fog.
Well, and you should have some experience of fog having resided in the Bay Area for more than a while.
Yeah.
Well, we actually used to have some pretty good fogs up against the Highland Rim along the Cumberland River when I was growing up in Nashville. But fog is... Well, there's a nice poem about that from a guy from Chicago, but we'll skip it.
Yeah, foggy down in Georgia today, huh?
Mm-hmm. By the way, Stacy blogs at The Other McCain. I just thought I'd throw that out.
Yeah, and you can find my good friend John Hogue's work at hogewash.com.
And Diana also is known to blog as well.
Yep, so, and keep an eye out. I'm going to be talking about credentials versus qualifications.
Oh, that's important.
Oh, okay.
Now, there's a whole bunch of that going on.
And what's your URL?
It is dealyadvancement.com. Just go to the blog.
Okay, dealyadvancement.com. Uh-huh. Anyways, well, of course, being Saturday night in September.
He's all fretted about the Alabama game, folks.
Well, I am slightly less fretful right now. Alabama has the ball at their own 40 with 58 seconds left in the game at Florida. It's 31, Alabama 31, and that's number one ranked Alabama Crimson Tide 31. And Florida 29, and it's almost over, and it looks like Alabama's going to be able to run out the clock. Florida just called a timeout, but Florida really gave us a game there.
They've got a home field advantage there, and it's not like they're a bad team this year.
It's not like they're a bad team. Let's go through the football scoreboard right now. With 7 minutes left in the game, Ohio State, ranked number 9, is at home against Tulsa, and they're hanging on. Ohio State leads 27-20, so that's a bit close for comfort for the Buckeyes fans who are, that includes my wife's family there in Ohio. Clemson at halftime leads Georgia Tech 7-3. At Clemson at home, leading 7-3. Meanwhile, Arkansas has rolled completely over Georgia Southern, 45-10, with 5 minutes left in the game. Your final score at number 3, Oklahoma 23, arch rival Nebraska 16. Iowa 30. They're ranked number 5. Kent State 7. I thought the Kent State score should have been 4, but I don't want to go into that.
Stacy.
Stacy.
I tell you what, sometimes I see these left-wing protesters out there, and I'm like, where's the Ohio National Guard when you really need them? That's just me. But anyways,
Stacy.
Let me continue with the scoreboard here. Texas A&M, ranked number 7, 34-0 over New Mexico. Number 8, Cincinnati, 38-24 over Indiana. That game was a little close to comfort for Cincinnati. Notre Dame, ranked number 12 at home, defeats Purdue 27-13. Number 15, Virginia Tech, lost at West Virginia. That was played in Morgantown. Coastal Carolina, ranked 16th. I didn't realize they'd become a top 20 powerhouse, but they defeated Buffalo 28-25. Michigan State, unranked, defeated number 24 Miami 38-17. But the big game, of course, tonight.
Yes, it kicks off at 8 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, that's going to be the SAT Bowl, as they call it, with Stanford playing at Vanderbilt.
This was an embarrassing spectacle.
What's that?
This must have been an embarrassing spectacle.
Well, actually, there is a Nerd Bowl, but it's the Caltech Beavers versus MIT.
I don't even want to know.
Well, speaking of football, this last Saturday night, and everybody that follows college football saw this play. With time running out at Florida State, by the way, opened the season just barely losing to Notre Dame. Okay, so this is how good Florida State was. With 6 seconds remaining on the clock, Jacksonville State quarterback Zarek Cooper found Damon Fillion Jackson for a 59-yard touchdown pass on the final game of the play to lift the Gamecocks to a 20-17 win. That marks the first time that Jacksonville State, FCS, what they call Football Championship Series, used to be Division I AA, ever led against an ACC foe. And it's and that play, that last play, was something to see. I mean, it made the top 10 highlights on ESPN. I mean,
it was right up there with some of the three-pointers I've seen as the buzzer was going.
Now, everyone knows that I'm a Bama fan. My father was alumni class of 1950 at Tuscaloosa, but I attended Jacksonville State University, which is in Jacksonville, Alabama, up in the northeast corner of the state between Gadsden and Anniston, over there. That's my alma mater, Jack State. And the thing that they're
close to such wonderful towns as Arab.
It's up in that neck of woods, Piedmont, Oxford. Anyways, but Jacksonville is the home of the Gallant Pelham. If you can look up, just Google Gallant Pelham, P-E-L-H-A-M. Famous artilleryman, but from the losing side of a certain war. But Jacksonville State's band is called the Marching Southerners, and it's the greatest marching band on the planet. Okay,
even better than the ROTC band that I was bandmaster of.
I'm telling you, it's the best band ever. But anyways, their most famous alumni is probably Randy Owen, lead singer of the group Alabama, along with Pulitzer-winning journalist and author Rick Bragg. Anyways, but also I am an alumnus, and I was very proud of the Gamecocks. Fight on for Old Jack State. Defeating Florida State in Tallahassee, and some of it, and I blogged about this. You can go see it over there, and I blogged the other McKay. You'll have to click over to the earlier in the week because it happened on Saturday. But I just, you know, I'm a football fan, and because my dad was alumnus of Alabama, I've always cheered for Alabama, but.
Well, my father was an alum of the University of Tennessee, and I don't cheer for them.
Yeah, because you're a Vanderbilt man.
Well, you look terrible in orange, I gather.
What's football. Well, we've talked enough about the important stuff. Now let's do some trivia.
Well, no, let's do a thought experiment, Stacy. Okay. Let me propose it to you. Pretend you're a member of the armed forces and not some rear echelon guy like I was, but somebody really out on the pointy end of the spear, you know, a fighter pilot, a ranger, a marine, a paratrooper, some guy on a submarine someplace, okay? And you find out that your senior commander has promised to give the potential senior commander of an enemy force that you're going might be sent against. He's promised to tell him that you're coming. What would that do for your confidence in your chain of command?
I'd be looking at a black hole myself, but okay.
Well, yeah. One of my
General Milley that we're talking about. Yes, he of the White Rage. That's his enemy. White Rage.
Well, one of my commenters just posted a link to the Wikipedia article on fragging.
A very sensible contribution. A truly sensible contribution.
Go ahead, Diana.
I said a truly sensible contribution.
Yes. That's the kind of guy that when I was in Vietnam did wind up getting fragged.
It's just, I told this story before. My son, who is now an E6.
That means a staff sergeant.
Yeah.
Three up and two down.
Yeah.
Three up and one down.
By the way, and speaking of that was my father's final rank during World War II. He was Staff Sergeant McCain. So this is at least the second Staff Sergeant McCain in the Army, U.S. Army, I mean to say. But when my son went to enlist, it was at down here in Maryland at Fort Meade. Mm-hmm. And that was the same day that, and when we went through the checkpoint there, they had to see everyone's ID in the car, because there were a lot of protesters there.
Well, the Bradley Manning trial was going down.
Bradley Manning.
The court martial was going on there.
Yeah, they were court martialing Bradley Manning while my son was there to enlist. And he took the oath and, to execute, the oath that they swear.
I've administered it quite often.
Okay. Well, tell the oath. What is the oath?
Well,
that you're obeying the commander in chief.
Well, obey all lawful orders of the officers appointed over me, and preserve, protect, defend the Constitution of the United States,
and the commander in chief, and the commander in chief at that time was Barack Obama. Okay. And so I had to think very, this was a serious thing, that
it was Richard Nixon. When I first took the oath, it was LBJ.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor man.
Well, anyway, and then in October of 2016, my son re-upped. Okay, they gave him they were making some incentives there. They made it worth his while. But he re-upped, but while he was on board, about to jump out of, they administered the oath in the back of a C-130 right before a jump. I've got photos to show this. Anyways, and so he re-upped. While we didn't know who the next president could have been, right? He could have been, the commander in chief being Hillary Clinton.
Good Lord.
Okay. So now he's, the commander in chief is Joe Biden. Okay. It doesn't matter who the commander in chief is. Obey the orders of the commander in chief.
I've served under four different presidents, LBJ, Nixon, Ford, and Carter.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you got to keep politics out of it.
Well, yeah, it looks like, though, that politics are too much of it. Yeah. And the kinds of one of the things that we did.
Well, when you start concentrating on things like white rage, like General Milley has, you forget about things like, oh, I don't know, intelligence.
War fighting.
Yes, or for that matter, one of the things that we in our public statements were very scrupulous, for example, during the Second World War, not to lie. We would not talk about some stuff. We would say stuff that might misdirect people, but it would still be literally true. But we made a point of not lying. And then you have stuff like the drone strikes that they pulled in the last few, you know, and there was over at Powerline, there was a really brutal post. Administration admits to drone strike error and talks about, you know, at what's going on there.
And why don't you just read that?
Well, yes. You know, the point is that Joe Biden is responsible for targeting drone strikes, but this is one of a long series of blunders that characterized our withdrawal from Afghanistan. The drone strike grew largely out of concern that another suicide bomber following the one that killed 13 American service members would strike at the Kabul airport. If the withdrawal had been properly planned and executed, these multiple fiascos probably would have been avoided. In any event, today's admission is a tragic coda, for now anyway, of the sad events of Afghanistan.
Yeah. There's a really good cartoon from Red State, Code Red, Biden standing there with his hands covered in blood. Jill, can I blame Trump for this?
Yeah. Well, you know, And one of the things, you know, it was so unnecessary. And I know that Tucker Carlson and certain of my paleo-conservative friends or paleo-libertarian friends do not like this idea of the endless war. But here's the point. We were not fighting an endless war, okay? We could have left permanently in Afghanistan, you know, somewhere, and people have talked about the number, between 2,500 and 5,000 men is roughly what you would. Well, let me finish saying this, is that if you had a battalion size of light infantry, if you had a helicopter, you know, in the aviation wing to support what the Afghan, you know, the Kabul government was doing, okay, so that if something flares up, you know, we can take care of business, okay, and you're not actually fighting a war except, you know, every once in a while something will flare up, and you have your special forces trainers in there to work with the thing. The number of casualties we have suffered since, I think, if you go back to 2014, it's less than 200 casualties in the past 7 years.
We kill more people in the first 6 months of a year in Chicago, but yeah. We'll get to that later. But here's the thing. I vaguely remember that we had a recent unpleasantness, somewhat recent unpleasantness with Japan and Germany, but I think it's been over now for
a bit more than 70 years.
76 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have forces in Japan and Germany and Italy.
Yep.
And so
Okinawa. Guam.
In case of Guam, we took it back.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, I'm not so concerned that we might have forces there or special forces training. But yes, it was time to end the kind of spending of $100 billion a year there that we were spending. And so I think the Trump was headed in the right direction about winding stuff down. We should have pulled a lot of the assets out, but we should have done it, as you point out, in an orderly fashion.
Well,
on the other
wait, Trump had actually signed an order to do it by January 31st. And of course, Milley decided that that was crazy and couldn't be allowed.
Actually, it was
May 31st. I'm sorry. Why I said January.
Well,
but it would have worked.
That gave 4 or 5 months to move people out, orderly wind down some things, and you still could. But the problem was Biden would not allow enough forces to stay there to hold both airfields. But anyway, this is just an example of the kind of incompetence we have going on. As basically what's happening, what I see happening is, this is a word that I learned in Colorado in the 70s. We are being Californicated. And you can see how third world California is just by the fact that even though the Democrats outregistered the Republicans at least 2-1, they were still running a fake election. KTLA, which is Channel 5 in Los Angeles, which is the Fox station, by the way, reported that Republicans trying to vote in L.A. were being told, "No, you voted already." And they had this wonderful, this West Hills resident named Estelle Bender, who's in her 80s, said that she was far from the only person who was having the problem. And basically, she said she filled out a provisional ballot and left angry. And she said, "I'd really like to know how I voted."
Yeah.
Of course, many Republicans never have voted for a Democrat while they're alive.
No, of course not. Yeah. Nor while they lived there. I have a friend who we joke that he, his wife, me, and my husband probably are voting Democrat now.
Yeah. Well, you leave the state. Well, you can check out any time you like.
Well, this
you
is
can't but, never leave.
But this is how much California has changed. I mean, Connie and I saw that handwriting on the wall in 1990 and got out of town. My Congress critter was Bob Dornan, B1 Bob. Okay, in Orange County. Well, Orange County has changed and is run by Democrats now. When I lived in our precinct in Orange County, okay, there was one registered Democrat in the entire precinct. There were two registered members of the Peace and Freedom Party, which is an offshoot of the communists, and everybody else was registered as a Republican. And Orange County ain't like that anymore.
But
California has changed since Connie and I escaped. On the other hand, the refugee situation coming out of California is probably going to get to be pretty interesting over the next year and a half.
Speaking of refugees.
Yeah, I got this one tweet that I put in the agenda that references what's going on at the International Bridge in Del Rio. Now, I used to do business in Del Rio, so I know the lay of the land here. And I mean, this is just absolutely terrible, the kind of conditions these people are in. And the really interesting thing is that the Fox guys had their news drone up making pictures, and then the FAA shut down drone flights through in the area. And so the Texas Highway Patrol started giving the Fox guys a ride in their chopper.
That was amazing because it's that bad.
Yeah.
I will say, I've been looking at the video, and all I can say is I did a very quick, the usual rough count noses. And I thought if this is the average, if what we're seeing is average, I'm guessing that they're going to have 16,000 people by tomorrow morning.
Well, it's interesting. They decided to do something actually rational and something that they can possibly do. Mm-hmm. Not far, just up the road from Del Rio, is Lackland Air Force Base. There's an Air Force base in the county. Okay. And they're talking about shipping all the Haitians back to Haiti by air. So you but it's something that is doable. You process them through Lackland, you know, give them a shower, throw them on a C-17 and kick them out at Port-au-Prince.
They can try it, I suppose.
You know,
well,
it'll be interesting, but we'll see. But I mean, at least they're figuring out that this is something that's too big for them. They're going to have to do something like that.
Yeah. Speaking of things too big,
I'm not going there.
Let's talk about Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend's testicles.
Stacey, you write about things that I just leave alone.
Yeah. Well, you've got to, we believe in science, okay? Mm-hmm. And so on the one hand, you have Dr. Fauci, and on the other hand, you have the testicles of Nicki Minaj's
cousin's friend
in Trinidad. And folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about, this is over on my blog, The Other McKay. Nicki Minaj is a Trinidadian, I think that's how you say it. She was born in Trinidad and moved to New York when she was a child and grew up there and became a rapper and is worth $80 million, her estimated net worth, $80 million, okay? Because America, of course, is a, systemic racist country that oppresses
misogynistic.
Women.
Don't forget misogynistic.
Misogynistic, yes.
Otherwise, she would have a real fortune, like be a billionaire like Oprah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyways, Nicki Minaj is a rapper who has 22 million Twitter followers, okay? Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that it is a good day, okay, when any show on CNN reaches 1 million viewers, okay? So her Twitter following is more than 20 times larger than the audience for CNN.
Well, they're probably net cum through the day is still probably, she's still probably got a 10-to-1 advantage on them.
Well, she definitely has she has clout, as they call it in the influencer world. Well, anyway, so she tweeted, I believe it was Monday, quote, "My cousin in Trinidad won't get the vaccine because his friend got it and became impotent. His testicles became swollen. His friend was weeks away from getting married. Now the girl called off the wedding. So just pray on it and make sure you're comfortable with your decision, not bully." Well, the entire media establishment, okay, jumped into fact-checking Nicki Minaj's tweet about her cousin's friend's testicles. Okay. Okay, CNN actually did some reporting for once. Okay, right?
This was really important if they're doing that.
Yeah, this is the important news according to CNN. Trinidad and Tobago Health Minister Terrence Delesing on Wednesday criticized as false the claim by American rapper Nicki Minaj that a person on the Caribbean island suffered swollen testicles after receiving a COVID-19 vaccine. Anyway.
The way that it was phrased, the way she phrased it would have me saying, yeah, that's a friend of a friend's story. Uh-huh, sure. But the way that CNN and everybody else jumped on this was absolutely hysterical. They are so, so focused on the narrative that they have completely gone, I can't use the words that come to mind.
Well, crazy. Well, it reminds me of Proverbs 28:1. the guilty flee when no man pursues.
Yeah. Well, anyways, what happened here, and you gotta understand, okay, is that as Diana says, the narrative trumps all, the optics, right? Mm-hmm. The Biden administration is trying desperately to pivot away from their debacle in Afghanistan. They're going to put that behind them and move on to news stories. So he picked a fight a week ago with the Republicans over vaccines. They're going to make vaccines mandatory.
Right? Or they're going to try.
Right. Yes, they're going to try. But anyway, and so their idea is they're going to scapegoat the Republicans as the anti-science party, right? Okay, these Republicans, we could beat this virus if it wasn't for these Republicans with their misinformation, denying science, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, and so what they're doing is they're trying to give you the idea that the average vaccine resistor, as they're calling them, that vaccine resistance is about old white guys, right? Well, John, you're an old white guy. Have you got the vaccine?
I was near the head of the line because I'm old, and in Maryland, they put us at the head of the line, particularly those of us like me who've got secondary conditions that it could be problems.
Yeah,
so, yes.
And
I was one of the first people.
Vaccinated.
I was one of the first. I was at near the head of the line.
Yeah, well, I didn't get vaccinated until this Delta variant thing started surging, and I saw that what they were heading toward, and I said, okay, I'm going to get vaccinated because you're not going to be able to cite me as a statistic. Ooh, those right-wing white males. No, I'm going to go get vaccinated. And so I'm vaccinated now, and I don't care, okay? But the fact is, if you look up the data, the higher percentage of people who aren't vaccinated are Black and Hispanic.
Okay. Right.
Asians, and women under 40. Don't
and women
that.
Under 40. Yes, that is exactly right. It is younger women, especially, and along with
Blacks, Hispanics, and women who are still able to get pregnant.
Childbearing age, yes. And so... But this defies the optic. And so because Nicki Minaj speaks to that audience, right? They couldn't have her out there stirring up opposition to the Biden mandate. You see, that doesn't fit the narrative.
Well, there's lots of things that don't fit their narrative. But you know what does fit my narrative?
The yellow button.
Exactly. Capitalism? Yes, we're halfway through, so it's time for that.
We have reached the portion of the podcast devoted to shameless capitalism, where I tell you that if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice near in the center column near the top a yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button with the word donate on it, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute dollars, rubles, euros, pesos, any currency you might happen to have anywhere in the world. It will take that at my PayPal account, and that will go to help support the blog, to help support the podcast, and also, most importantly, to keep my wife happy, because my wife likes it when I have money.
Mm.
That's why we have six children.
Stacy, you haven't noticed something that our nice supporters have provided to help support the broadcast, though. How many laptops do you see over here?
You've got two laptops.
That's right. There's a new laptop here. And because my old laptop was getting long in the tooth and being a business.
Wait, long in the tooth? Laptops have teeth?
Yes.
When did I miss this?
Sure.
You're not technical, dear.
Yes. They have gigabytes even.
Knew it. I wasn't going to be able to manage to head that one off at the pass, could I?
But, no. But, well, no, but I, you know, this other laptop that has been running us since we started the podcast over 3 years ago is now fully depreciated and, you know, it works. So it's obviously obsolete. So we have a nice new laptop here. By the way, the Apple M1 processor is a real wonderful thing. But anyway, if you go to the sidebar at Hogwash and click on that tip jar icon, it'll take you off to my PayPal account and you can help support us that way. Or you can shop at the Hogwash store. I don't have to share that. And you can use the Amazon shopping links that you find around Hogwash and the other McCain or other bloggers who participate in the Amazon affiliate program. That's if you use those links, we get a small cut of the action. You pay the same price, and it's something nice that Amazon actually does for the interwebs. Regardless of how you choose to support us, and we're thankful for your support, please remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Indeed. Meanwhile, back at the FDA, have a little bit of rebellion. Now, I should point
out. I blogged about this morning.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Great article, by the way.
And it's really interesting because this FDA panel, well, we had a couple of, we'll talk as we go through the article about people at the FDA who've quit over what Biden was proposing. Which I think is very honorable, but also this, there's a group of medical professionals and academics and industry people who are part of the FDA board that voted on whether or not booster shots should be allowed. And take it away, Stacy.
Okay. Well, what happened was is that a Food and Drug Administration FDA panel voted Friday afternoon to reject a plan to provide Pfizer coronavirus booster vaccines for most Americans due to a lack of data showing that the additional doses are safe and effective. Mm-hmm. The panel opposed the proposal by a vote of 16 to 12.
Yeah.
Anyway, and this was seen as a defeat for the Biden administration, which had been planning, we are told, that they had been planning to roll this out on Monday. They were going to start the booster shots on Monday. But what happened was is that two members of the FDA panel had resigned in protest, complaining, and this is not, by the way, this is not some right-wing thing. They were complaining that the Biden administration abruptly shifted from planning 8 months after the first dose to get your first shot to 5 months after the first shot. Okay, now why would they do that? Why would they change that, you see? But anyways, the science just was lacking here. But this was about the optics. At just about the same time that Afghanistan was falling to the Taliban, okay, Biden started talking up the idea of booster shots. Gosh, I wonder why he would do that, John.
Well, Pfizer had been plugging the idea of booster shots for 2 or 3 months. I mean, but then again, they're in the business of selling vaccines. And so they're saying, hi, would you like to have a third round? But here's the thing. This is what happens when you follow the science. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, you and I were talking about before we got started on the podcast this evening about how I'm an engineer, not a physician, but what I do practicing engineering is very similar to what physicians do practicing medicine. We wind up having to solve problems we've never seen before and that there's nothing in the literature about. And so we have to look at it and make our best guess. And sometimes That is, so that forms a hypothesis, and we run the experiment we actually do some science. Mm-hmm. We form a hypothesis, we test it, and if it works, then basically what we've done is we've made a measurement of something. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work, we've made a discovery about what doesn't work. But the point is that that's the science. Formulating a hypothesis based mm-hmm. on the evidence we have before us, testing the hypothesis, seeing if it works. If it works, that's one thing. If it doesn't work, you go back around to regenning a better hypothesis. And that's what these people are doing. They're saying, hold it, we haven't tested the hypothesis well enough yet mm-hmm. to ethically turn this loose on the public. I mean, yeah. Engineers do the same thing. You know, I've designed stuff that turned out, you know, if we put it in production, could have started fires in people's homes. Well, we decided not to sell that. Right. So, you know, it's the same thing going on here with the people on this FDA board. They're actually doing some science. Mm-hmm. The problem is, the science doesn't fit the narrative.
Nope.
And science doesn't have to do with voting on it. Okay? If they'd taken a vote in the early 17th century, Galileo would have lost.
Right.
And by the way, Galileo was wrong. The sun isn't the center of the universe. Mm-hmm. It is the center of the solar system, but not the universe. So, you know, that shows you how science and our understanding of it changes over time as we have better information and have run more experiments.
Well, you know, the thing is that this narrative, this controlling the narrative, it's exactly mm-hmm. what went wrong in Afghanistan, is that Biden was thinking about the optics, mm-hmm. okay? What he had in mind was a big speech on the 20th anniversary of 9/11.
At least he kept his mouth shut this time.
Yeah, he would have had a big speech on 9/11, you know, declaring victory. You know, the old saying, what they said that in Vietnam was that we should declare victory and go home. And he had something like that planned. But then the Taliban, of course, had its other ideas, and mm-hmm. Biden's planned optics fell apart. Well, that's when they switched over to this booster idea.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, because you have to have something to put before the people for their 2 minutes.
And I have something to add to that later. Go on.
Go for it now.
Okay. As I'm sure a lot of you have been hearing, the September 18th Justice for J6 rally was today.
Oh my
and
goodness.
This was hysterical. At a certain point, even the American press had to admit it was tweeted that he thought that the proportion of press to protesters was about two press protesters to one press person, and said, strike that. Next tweet was, strike that. I just had a journalist with a French accent try to interview me. Basically, the press and the feds outnumbered the protesters. The people who did show up essentially were a few middle-aged folks with little American flags and MAGA hats. And actually, most of them didn't even have MAGA hats, just American flags, standing around looking really puzzled.
Well, Dinesh D'Souza, and by the way, the feds were so, the under, quote unquote, undercover feds were so obvious. Okay. People were just pointing out fed. And so
Brooks Brothers
they brought in this army of riot police dressed like stormtroopers. I mean, you see them marching on there, and it just literally looks like, Star Wars stormtroopers.
At least they weren't goose-stepping.
Well, anyways, they're in this all this black gear. So Dinesh D'Souza just tweeted out that an armed man who became surrounded by these riot police surrounded this armed man, turns out to be an undercover FBI
agent. Yay, guy. Of course, right? He did.
Okay, there's nobody to arrest because everybody's.
Well, not only that, but they put the fence back up around the Capitol for this.
Yeah, and
they won't take it down.
They're all about the optics, and they're trying to stage events, right? Mm-hmm.
The thing is, the optics are making them look foolish, and that's why I think this is great. We need to have more of this so that we can point and laugh.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Hillary Clinton.
Well, yeah, but that was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
There was this wonderful tweet that started reappearing. It was from the 1st of November, 2016, from Hillary Clinton. Computer scientists have apparently uncovered a covert server linking the Trump Organization to a Russia-based bank. And then there's her press release statement from Jake Sullivan, who, by the way, is Biden's chief of staff. Statement from Jake Sullivan, new report, yada, yada, yada. And there was other stuff people found from Podesta and the other usual suspects. Later in the day that happened, I was able to put up a post that was titled, "The Grand Jury Charges That." And the post basically consists of the indictment of Michael Sussman for his interaction with tech executives.
Who is Michael Sussman?
Michael Sussman, at the time of this went down, was
a
partner.
Cutout.
He was the partner at Perkins Coie who is
it's the Democratic law firm tied to Hillary Clinton.
And he was billing his time doing this back to the Clinton campaign and to someone who was basically Rodney Jaffe of Newstar, who is the tech executive number one. Mm-hmm. And it's all sorts of interesting stuff about there. You know, even if it never gets to trial, just what's divulged in this indictment is going to make a lot of people uncomfortable. But I also had another post later in that same day titled SOL.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily what you're thinking. It stands for statute of limitation. And the statute of limitations on what the Sussman is charged with runs out tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Okay.
Talk Like a Pirate Day, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, tomorrow is Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Yes.
It is.
I'll have to get my blue parrot out and put it on my shoulder.
Colors, what?
Beautiful plumage. But anyway, we've got a whole, statute of limitations on almost anything that would be involved in the Durham investigation is 5 years. And so that 5 years is rolling forward now. So there's a bunch of things that happened that happened between now and the election, that between now and November, if they're going to be indicted, need to be indicted. And there's stuff that happened after the election and in early 2017. So the next 6 months are either going to be a real dud or fasten your seatbelts.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. Now that there has been an indictment, there will be either A, a trial, or B, a plea bargain. Now, if there's a trial, imagine the evidence and testimony that will come out. But if there's a plea bargain, you have to have an actual plea stating what you did. Okay? Mm-hmm. So there's no win there for the Democrats here, because it had been shown that this narrative, this, you know, and we talked about the narrative, this Russian collusion narrative was fabricated by the Clinton campaign and its
Supporters.
It's supporters, yeah. But let's not get into Brett Kimbellin right now.
Well, actually, I had a post about that. He tried to actually spin the fact that he was involved in this, and there's no way.
Whoa.
There's no way that somebody the caliber of Rodney Jaffe or a powerhouse internet infrastructure firm like Newstar would ever have anything to do with him.
Yeah.
Now, did he have some connections to people who were involved in the campaign? Yeah, sure. But he's tied in with the Chalupa girls and the Venmans.
Right.
But anybody really important at this stage? No.
So you don't think that the Cody Shearer connection matters?
Not on being a hacker.
Ah.
Right? Okay. Why would somebody with the X, you know, now, could he have possibly had some sort of assignment where he was a cutout? Yeah, maybe, but that would be it. I think he was just engaging in puffery when he claimed to have the level of involvement he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what's going down with this. It's going to be incredibly weird over the next 6 months,
because things have been pretty weird lately.
But I'm talking about, you know, in terms of the Russian collusion narrative, that's over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, what we still don't have is the mainstream media admitting that that was, you know,
they're mentioned
that their role in perpetrating this crime.
News,
it was a crime.
Newspaper One is among the people and organizations in the indictment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but see, this is the narrative again. They've moved on. Okay? You know, and this is the thing. It's just like we're moving on from Afghanistan. The crime committed against the Trump campaign, the Trump organization, and President Trump, that he was a victim of a crime.
Okay? Yes.
And
well, he wasn't the only one, though, because anybody who was a significant supporter then got caught in the Trump derangement.
Now, Michael Flynn.
That's true. How about Devin Nunes?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and so they were trying to dig up dirt on him. And Esquire magazine, which is published by Hearst Magazine Media, published an article by Ryan Leza about how the Nunez family farm had wound up moving, a dairy farm operation, had wound up moving from California to Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And somehow there's some sort of hinky about this. And basically, Nunez said, well, this is defamatory, and he sued for defamation and in Iowa. And
oh, boy.
And
better idea than California.
Well,
that's what happened. Well, that's what happened to Gawker. They thought that they were safe, right, because they were based in New York. They got sued in Florida. And they got a Florida jury that didn't want, you know, that were more pro wrestling fans than they were journalism fans.
Well, here's the thing is that Dunius sued for two different forms of defamation. One involved in the publication of the original article in Esquire, and the other for Liza tweeting about it as a second publication of the thing. And then he said, and there was a conspiracy between Hearst and Magazine Media and Liza. Well, the initial publication, basically the U.S. District Court threw the whole case out. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals late this week reinstated two of the counts. He said the republication count was pled well enough to survive a motion of defense, a motion to dismiss, and so was the conspiracy count. So the trial's at least it's back for things like discovery and that sort of stuff in the district court.
Oh, yes, discovery. Oh, discover you, sweet bitch.
Yes, it is fun. But that's where you get to demand answers.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. speaking of demanding answers, yeah. One of the things, and if you pay attention to this, okay, if you've been paying attention to tonight's podcast, what one of the themes that keeps coming up is the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. And in other words, every story becomes a media bias story, okay? I've learned this as a conservative journalist, okay? There would be no need for conservative journalists mm-hmm. if just regular journalists weren't so dishonest, okay? And they're just, and it's gone beyond bias to outright lies nowadays.
Yes.
But anyways, I have a post up top of the blog right this moment called Family Demands Answers.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the yellow crime scene tape on there. And I said, one of the most tedious consequences of the Black Lives Matter movement is that news media have taken hold of the notion that anytime a black person dies in an interaction with police, this calls into question the motives and tactics of police. Mm-hmm. There is now a journalistic cliche in which family members tearfully recount what a wonderful person their deceased relative was and call police conduct into question. So that the headline, and I stack up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 headlines here that are variations on this same headline, Family Demands Answers. Now, part of what's wrong with this, okay, part of what's wrong with this is that we know, as a matter of statistical data, okay, that police shoot as many white suspects.
More.
Yeah, they shoot actually more white suspects than they shoot black suspects. And most of the suspects, of course, were guilty and armed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That it is a very rare thing, okay, for an innocent, unarmed person to be shot by police.
Well, mm-hmm. you had one thing in here about not being able to remember any white families other than that crazy woman who got shot by the cops in Nashville.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She charged him with the pickaxe. What were they supposed to do?
Well, but I got...
That video was sadly hilarious.
Well, on the other hand, I can remember another white family, the Babbitts.
Right. Okay.
You mean
okay.
Ashley Babbitt's
family. Ashley Babbitt's family, by the way, who was shot by a black cop.
Yes.
Yeah. And see, we're not, what are we doing? Well, the one thing we're not doing, we're not looting Walmart, you know, or Target or Best Buy.
Or anything else.
Yeah,
Well, there was a rally on the
January 6th.
There was a rally this afternoon about the entire thing.
And nobody showed up. Well, anyways, but the...
Certainly nobody got shot. Nothing got burned.
But the media narrative... But the media narrative, okay, mm-hmm. is trying to create... and it's what I call the atrocity narrative,
yes.
Okay? Is that in a nation of 330 million people, okay, you can find a dozen examples a year of anything, including people arrested for having sex with dogs, as I've proven in the past. At the end of the year, I did the year in dog sex update. And you can do anything like that because it's 330 million people. Well, yes, okay, there are thousands, there are hundreds of people who are shot by cops every year,
mm-hmm.
okay? And if something like 40% of those suspects that get shot are black, then this gives you 300 or 400 cases to choose from, in which case if 1% of them are shady, Okay, then roughly every 3 months you have a case where you can say, hey, this looks bad. That doesn't mean there's any racism or oppression involved. It's just things go wrong. Sometimes.
Look, let me put it to you like this. In a lot of major metropolitan areas, you've got a problem with gang warfare. And the gangs that are dressed in blue are just better equipped than a lot of the other ones.
And better trained.
And so there is an element of that in some places, and I will give that. But most of the cops in most of the places in the United States are just trying to do their job of maintaining peace and order in society.
And there was a tragedy, a real tragedy, this past week in Paulding County, Georgia, which is right down in my neck of my old stomping grounds. I used to cover local sports in Paulding County, which is right next to Douglas County, where I grew up. I dated some girls from Paulding County, but we don't have to bring that up right now. You never know who may be listening, and you know, the statute of limitations is probably expired by now. Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
Actually, if they were underage, there isn't one.
He was.
Why would you even say that, John? Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
Because of some of the people we've worked with in the past.
Well, okay. So meanwhile, in Paulding County, what happened was that a 12-year-old was killed. He was a passenger in a vehicle that fled from police after a traffic stop by a Georgia State Patrol trooper. pulled over a car for speeding about 1 o'clock in the morning, and the driver, whose name was Charles Moore, wouldn't roll down the window, refused to provide any form of ID, and then drove off at a high rate of speed, and the trooper performed what's known as a pit maneuver, where you bump the rear bumper and spin the car out. And unfortunately, went into a ditch, rolled over, and the 12-year-old boy was killed. Well, so you have the typical family demands answer story. Never mind how many pit maneuvers are performed in Georgia every year, because I've seen a few of them.
Well, not only that, but why would, you know, society needs to demand answers of that family about why that 12-year-old was out at 1 o'clock in the morning with a drunk driver.
Who did not
have a license.
You know.
Yes, and by the way, there were warrants out for the Charles Moore in two different counties.
So, you know, that's the thing, is that that trooper was just doing his job.
Right.
And somebody else was involved in what amounts to reckless endangerment of that 12-year-old and the 14-year-old who was in the car as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the problem has got to be obviously the fact that we just don't have a good handle on controlling the behavior of all these bad people. So, oh, here's our crazy person who's dangerous.
Okay.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot says she's going to curb violence by suing the city's gangs.
Yeah, that's going to work.
She's going to sue the Crips, the Blood, the Gangster Disciples.
MS-13,
Do they have DNO insurance?
And the Latin Kings. Don't forget the Latin Kings. They're actually.
Hey, John, do they have DNO insurance?
Oh me! But the point is that, you know, but Mayor Lightfoot is going to solve gang violence by suing them.
Yeah, and you know why they're doing this, of course. Right. Okay. The reason they're suing is because trying to prosecute black criminals in this environment, sending them to prison. See, that's what they, you know, the Black Lives Matter wants to prevent.
On the other hand, you're going to get the same 12 jurors that you would have for a criminal trial for the civil trial. And
good what, luck and, with that.
Well, look, what do you look? What if there's a counterclaim against the city?
There you
the
go.
The jury could wind up awarding.
Family demands answers.
Yeah. Family demands answers. Why are we being sued just because our and see, and it's terrible. It is terrible that the media. This is the a type of racism, right? Okay, in the media to pretend that this kind of behavior is typical of the black community when it's actually not. But I hear the boogie woogie piano music in the background, which tells me that it's time once again for us to get out of here.
Yep.
So until the next Saturday night, we'll have to see you again. 7 o'clock Saturday night. We'll be back.
Thanks for joining us, Diana.
All right.
Good night, y'all.
Good night, folks.
Stay away from him, man. He's old.
I know. I don't want y'all dying of it.